Alrighty, very good. Welcome to all of you. This is the MediaBids.com Power Hour. We are delighted that you are here. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a call that is filled with those that are in the publication and publishing business, those that are in the media and online sales, and that in general, the overarching piece is that we're all in the advertising sales arena. We've been hosting calls like this for 182 months, going all the way back to 1995, every month writing an article for our sector, every month coming together for these kinds of programs that are intended to be educational and informational and always intended with the approach that you can take exactly what's coming from these and be able to deploy these strategies and approaches starting today. Absolutely. Okay? With me is Jed. He is the CEO and founder of MediaBids.com. They are a wonderful online source. And Jed, how about some opening words? We so appreciate all the work that you do behind the scenes with your team to put these on, and, of course, the way that you serve our publication and publishing clients. So how about some opening words?
Okay, just real quickly. First of all, thank you, Ernest. Ernest is, as you will find out this hour, Ernest knows an enormous amount about publications and what it takes to make them successful, and we always learn a lot by listening to what he has to say. MediaBids is a online marketplace. We give publications and advertisers a way to connect. We do it in a variety of different ways, but it's a good way to build revenue outside of your normal channels. We work with about 10,000 publications and about 17,000 advertisers, and most of them national or regional in their focus. And we track ads, so we're able to sort of show advertisers exactly what's working for them and what isn't, and as a result, we sell an enormous amount of print ads. So if you'd like to learn more, you'll get some emails after the conference that'll have my email address on it. You know, please feel free to reach out or give us a call.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jed. And Jed and I have been working together with our team for years and years and years together. We so appreciate it. This is our 51st call together, Jed. Last was our big 5-0.
Right.
It's really been great. And all the topics, just so all of you know, are always focused on topics that will help you win in the advertising and publishing space. So recognize that that is the reoccurring theme. My name is Ernest. My company is Power Hour. We've been in business since 1995. I've been in the publication and advertising space, though, since the mid-'80s. In fact, worked for a group by the name of Prime Media. I mentioned that, Jed, because Prime Media just sold in the last couple of weeks. Sort of interesting to see that. KKR was the early founder, which was the Kravis Group,
right,
and rolled that company up to more than $1 billion and just sold it in the last 30 days. My company, we provide business coaching and training. We've worked with more than 800 publishing companies all over the world and advertising sales teams of all kinds, both print and online. We do all of our work by conference call, by email, by phone. We have a recruiting division. We have a search engine SEO team. We have an investment banking group. We help our clients buy and sell publications and their properties. And then we have a very large footprint on the LinkedIn side and do a lot of training. We are member number 512 of 100 million. And I mentioned that, Jed, because today LinkedIn went public.
I know. How much of the IPO did you get?
Let me just suggest that I do have IPO shares that were provided at $45. It opened at $85, but
yeah.
I'm really not a trader. I got to be honest. Those are for, you know, the days when I can sit on the beach for the rest of my life, so to speak.
Right.
So anyhow, but very interesting. I'm a big believer in the LinkedIn model and the business networking. And for all of you who've done entire calls about LinkedIn, it is the single biggest, most significant opportunity from a selling and marketing perspective. But let's dive into what we're going to cover here today. We're going to be talking about smart compensation plans. And there's three key points we're going to be covering. We encourage you to take lots of notes during the course of our program. If you have any specific questions, just hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, or send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com, and we will tuck you right into some of the questions. We have more than 26 pages of questions, and some were reoccurring, obviously, so we'll work and weave those in. Let's start with the first point, though. What is the state of the economy and business as it relates to publications, publishing, media, and advertising sales? And, Jed, as you know, behind the scenes, we did some research. We went looking around to see what was out there, and there was some fascinating reports, and I'm just going to share a couple of those stats because this just sets a little framework. For example, PricewaterhouseCoopers did a report that showed that web advertising, which is the health and wealth of the advertising world, actually rose 15% to $26 billion. And you might all pause and go, wow, Ernest, thanks for starting with the website, but what if we're on the pub side? Or what if we're, what if we're doing pub but not enough on the web? What if we're just doing web and we don't have the publication side? Just recognize that in general, money's being spent, and it went up 15%. That's the important principle to recognize, and there's more to this. Overall, the Internet ad revenue in 2010 surpassed that of newspapers. Okay, newspapers, 22 million compared to 26.
Billion.
Thank you. Billion. Yes, thank you. Missed just one digit. Radio, and, cable TV was 22 billion, and broadcast networks were 15 billion. Radio was 13 billion. Here's the key principle here to recognize that money is being spent. Newspapers are declined in revenue about 6%. Not 60, but about 6. The interesting part also to recognize is that TV and radio are struggling to keep their dollars. It actually is a very good sign on the publication side, and in general for all advertising, it means that advertisers are scrambling the deck a little bit more. Okay? So that was a report from PricewaterhouseCoopers. There was another report that we gathered. The Pew Research Center did one, State of the News Media. Talked about all three cable news channels, CNN, Fox, MSNBC lost viewership. So did the networks, the news and the local, but that radio was flat. Another indicator, Jed, telling us that the advertising dollars are there, they're being reshuffled. But the most important stat from that, Jed, just kind of the state of the state, is that more than half of all North Americans, including our wonderful friends and colleagues in Canada, more than half of all of those in North America are getting some form of their news on a mobile device. Okay, kind of interesting, right, Jed? I mean, it's that we're getting the news and we're gathering our news and our advertising when we think about how publications and online media and advertising all fits together, but we're getting it on a mobile device. Any thoughts or comments just related to that trend?
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly it's what's coming. I think the interesting thing about that is that if you take it a step further back and took a look at who's writing the information that people are getting on the mobile devices, I think more often than not it's print publications. But right, I mean that's going to continue to grow and continue to be something that people depend on more and more.
Yep. No. Absolutely. We see that trend continuing forward. And so as we kind of look across the bow, there was one other interesting stat. First quarter of this year, advertising spend increased year over year by 13%. And the two biggest sectors were financials that grew by 38%, the financial services sector, and the retail sector. So I thought that was kind of interesting, thinking about the retail space. And what it really says to me is that the economy is ticking forward, Jed, and money's back being spent. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, just to go back to the stat you mentioned earlier, just so everyone takes note of it, the 2010, as you mentioned, is the first year that Internet sales surpassed newspaper sales. But if you combine newspaper and magazine sales, right, it's still bigger than the Internet, which is sort of shocking in the sense that if you ask, 100 people on the street, who sold more ads, Google or newspapers, I think that about 99 of them would say Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually related to that, we actually heard from one of our clients in the last 30 days that for the first time that Google has actually hired a team in Arizona and that they're actually on the street selling just like a directory. I mean, no doubt that they're Google Places. And, of course, this just, again, falls under the state of the state and what we're seeing and observing. But they have a team, and we're not certain if it's, 5 or 105, but there's a team in Arizona that is actively selling Google Places, working with local businesses, upselling to some of their bonus opportunities that they're creating around Google Places. It's very, very evident, Jed, that they're going after the directory business. But in general, all advertising space in general, I mean, their footprint is very significant, and we continue to watch the work that they're doing. The point that we want all of you to take from the opening pieces and the opening couple minutes of this call is this very simply, that, you know, there is not this deep, dark, black hole that advertising dollars are being moved all over and that no one's spending money. That is just not categorically the truth. The reality is the dollars are moving around, and that with the softness in, for example, just TV and radio as a category all by itself means that as from an online and print publication perspective, you have a very, very nice opportunity. The key piece, though, here is that you absolutely positively have to have your digital and web strategies in place. Okay? For those of you that do, beautiful, high five. For those of you that don't, you absolutely need it. Okay? And related to this point number one, we also wanted just to chat a little bit because it sets the stage. Our topic overall is called Smart Compensation Plans. And the second part of this is, you know, how are these trends impacting compensation plans? You know, what are we seeing with advertising sales teams, and how are they impacting the leaders of publications? So certainly, Jed, as we see this on the recruiting side, House of Power Hour, we absolutely see much more conservative approach. It's been for the last couple of years, more conservative approach to compensation, looking for those who are more tried and true. It might have been maybe in past years that we might have hired five and see who stuck. Those days are over. Those that are in sales leadership positions or those that are coming on board with publications have very strong online background and experience as well. That's expected to be there. So, you know, while we're seeing more conservative, we're also seeing a little less hiring, companies doing with a little bit more, stretched a little thinner, or rather than maybe folding in a team member, we might be offloading a portion of that skill set to a contract person, a part-time person, or to an outside vendor, for example. Instead of having an inside web person, we might contract out to a web vendor. Any comments just related to the things that you're hearing related broadly to compensation and broadly related to publications and online media?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that more and more publications are, you know, and I think you're going to get to this, are sort of getting, have sort of reconfigured what their strategy is for selling, right? Whether they want to have a unique digital team, or whether they want to have print, or whether they want to, you know, blend that together. And if you're going to blend it together, you know, finding salespeople who feel comfortable talking about both mediums, can be a challenge. And I think that, you know, the people I speak with, I think that tends to be sort of one of the real hurdles that they struggle with when they're considering a new hire.
Yep, absolutely, and we'll talk a little bit about that in our second point here about the distinction companies that are looking to have their sales teams do the selling of online and print under one team versus those that are doing it on two. And I know that we've seen some similar presentations, Jed, related to that. As we roll along, we're going to weave in some of the questions that have come in. So, for example, we have a question that came in from Aaron asking about research on magazines and showing readership and the information related to that. Magazine Publishing Association, Aaron, is great. MPA is a great resource. We're hoping also that the information that we shared today, the Pew Research, is fantastic. They do a really great job called The State of the News Media 2011. You would really like to see that. And PricewaterhouseCooper also has done extensive research on the media space. So, Aaron, that would be a good place if you'd like to get some more information about readership and some of the stats that we're rolling through here today. There was also a couple of other questions in this opening point, Jed. Let me just also bring in, there was a question from, there was almost 26 pages here. Okay, here we go. We have a note that came in from Glenn in Calgary. This is business in our tourism sector has been tough in the last 2 to 3 years with many advertisers dropping print and spending less on advertising, which affects compensation levels. Even more work is required. In the light of this problem, how can you maintain compensation levels? It is an important part as we kind of bridge, Glenn, into the second part of our program here today. But we do have to consider, is it our team that's not selling, or is it the sector that's in fact declining. And you can measure that a number of ways, but even just literally from sheer number of advertisers, sheer number of pages, projected revenue. There's all kinds of ways to look at a sector. I will tell you, Glenn, I spend about 90% of my time focused on what we can do as a team to control our own destiny. But quite honestly, if you were, you know, maybe selling advertising into the automotive, which has been challenging, or into the real estate in some sectors, that's been more challenging. New home sector. There has been certain sectors, Jed, as we know, that have been very difficult, and that's where you actually do, Glenn, have to take a breath and look to see what those strategies might be. It might be to change your circulation. It might be to change your print size. It might be increase your electronic footprint, always an important strategy in our entire media mix. We have seen publishers and publications and media sales teams of all kinds having to make changes to their model that in some cases have been out there for 50 years. Think about that. 50 years. Every day you get up with your shoes on and everything looks like the sun's up. In the last 12 and 24 months, you suddenly pause and say, where's the sun? Okay? So, Glenn, if you're in a sector where it's truly about the sector, then you may have to look at some of the categorical changes within your model itself. Jed, any comment on either of those questions that are rolling around here?
No, I mean, I think you hit the main points. I mean, it's there's, you know, obviously you want your sales efforts to be in areas that can produce results.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and quite honestly, companies are having to be, you know, more flexible, you know, more flexible in their approach than they've ever been. Another comment just in this opening part about just setting the framework is we've seen less equity opportunity, meaning less ownership opportunity. But now as we're seeing the recovery come through the other side, we're seeing, again, the more aggressive companies that are stepping back up and making this available for senior leadership people. Okay? So very good. We'll continue to flow the questions as we're rolling along. If you have any questions as we roll into the second and third part, just send them to Ernest@powerhour.com. Or just hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, because the first part was really more of a foundational conversation. Let's dive in more granular. In point number two, we said that we're going to talk about the foundation of smart compensation plans and then what are the factors to consider when looking at your current or existing compensation plans. Okay? So this is a little bit, just at the highest level, sort of measured twice, cut once. This is also sort of Covey's principle, right, that says go out and focus with the end in mind, okay? So compensation plans are very complex, and there are a lot of variables, and you're going to hear us roll through 10 or 12 of those variables. There is not a perfect compensation plan, but there is a perfect compensation plan for you, your team, and your organization in your sector and the work that you do, okay? And it's worth playing for, absolutely worth playing for, okay? So the first piece to recognize is you want to take a look at your house accounts, you know, what's existing biz and the length of time that that's been in. You want to take a look at your renewal biz and how that ties into compensation plans, okay? So if I walk into a company and I'm given, you know, 10 pages, Jed, those are considered house biz. I didn't do anything to earn those, right?
Right.
Yeah, just house biz. I might earn a different rate on that. I might earn a different rate when I renew them. It shows that I displayed the effort that I went on to navigate that forward. Another factor when looking at commission structures is also to look at what is your renewal percentage. You know, if you have 10 renewals up, do you renew 2 of 10 or 10 of 10? And we have clients on both sides of that spectrum, okay? These are other factors. It means that if I can go in, Jed, and I can renew 10 of 10, that I'm such a mainstay, that I'm such an absolute, that I so dominate, that means that renewals are relatively easy. Okay, so that means I might earn a lesser commission rate. I might earn 2% on those, and I might earn 22% on the new.
Okay. Now, when you're thinking about this, Ernest, are you devising a compensation package based on an individual salesperson's strengths, or do you go by the team?
Yeah, it's not by a person's individual strengths, although it can be tailored to their portfolio. And let me explain that. For example, if you have someone who's going to work national in key accounts, well, what do we know about those? Those are not one-call closes. That takes time to nurture those. But then when they do come in, they can come in the millions of dollars or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we have to balance both. We have to look at the time factor to generate a sale and then the sale on the other side of that. Or if you're looking at a territory rep that's been assigned a certain portfolio by geography or by assignment, and they have a certain portfolio, and let's imagine that 80% of those are all former advertisers. Well, let's be honest, that's not a walk in the park. Okay, or have been assigned a portfolio that used to be 80, and now I've been at it 300 more. What does that do to my compensation plan? So it can be tailored to the situation or to the environment, but not tailored to the individual person, if that makes sense. Okay? And the reason we don't do that is that because if that person were to leave, then every single time we have somebody fold in, we have to build another compensation plan. It's like building it to their, to, you know, an individual's fingerprint, which is challenging at best, and you get into other issues with it's time consuming. It means you have to constantly build and rebuild compensation plans for individuals, and it can be very disruptive as well with other team members. Okay? So house accounts, renewal percentages. Also think about the next point related to smart compensation plans. Think about the value of new biz. The value of new biz, whether we're talking about online biz of any kind, print publication biz of any kind, new biz is the lifeblood, the new opportunity. So think about that as the certainly a different tier than house or renewal. But also recognize that you have those on your team that are your prime hunters. Now, Jed, we bump into this all the time. I mean, we have this just superstar, rock star that's out there that just goes out and sells a gazillion dollars in advertising. And one day they wake up and go, wow, I'm so busy serving and renewing this additional biz that I can't get to new biz.
Yep, it's a classic, you know, right? Happens all the time.
And we've just turned our superstar best salesperson on our team into the highest paid customer service rep.
Right.
The highest paid inside sales rep, so to speak. Okay? So that is a challenge all by itself, and there are specific strategies to the way that that works and the way that it ties into career paths. But please recognize, we see this constantly. This is a reoccurring theme, and if you look at the top 10% in your publication and in your on your advertising teams, the top 10% generally fall into that category. As a leader in your company, you have to step back and say, wait a minute, why would I want my best hunters sitting on the porch farming, doing nothing but farming and nurturing the existing biz? In the early days where I might have gotten 30 or 50 or 100% growth, today what I'm getting is 5 and 10%. I'm literally getting nothing from them, nothing new. Okay, and frankly, they know they can get up every day, put their shoes on, and make a whole lot of money, Jed, and really not have to do anything.
Right, right. And
okay.
the proof that this is true is that in most cases, when you hire a new salesperson to go and cover a territory where someone has been working for a long time, they'll come back with orders from customers that the old, more experienced, better salesperson didn't get. And because they didn't know any better, right? They're out there, they're being hungry, and it happens more often than not.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So that's another piece in your compensation plan in terms of smart compensation plans, okay? Let's also talk about, because there were some questions related to this, Jed, and we'll tie in some of the specifics. Let's talk about the ratio between commission and salary, okay? And in the third part of the call, we'll talk about the transition and how this works, but recognize that the closer you are to 50-50, the better your compensation model is. So let's look at the two ends of the spectrum. Jed, straight commission, right? Tough to bring really good people on. Unless, the distinction is, unless I walk in and there's a portfolio of 40 clients or 400 clients, guess what? It's really not straight commission. I already have a built-in client base. So it's a little deceiving when we talk about straight commission. But to talk about straight commission, starting cold in a territory, that is going to be tough to ever find an A player and probably never even find a B advertising sales professional that's going to step in and do that. Let's go to the other side. Okay, we see publishing companies and media sales groups that are heavy to the salary, 90% or more to the salary. And we think there's a flaw in that. And quite honestly, the challenge there is that there's not enough incentive, Jed, to really go sell something. Because whether or not I make a sale or not, in fact, frankly, I could lose $1 million in biz and it cost me $2,500. Okay? You just don't have that incentive that's built in. So we believe that the closest to 50-50, if a person's going to earn $80,000, their salary is 40 and they're going to earn 40. And of that 40, maybe they get house accounts that helps them with 10. Maybe they have another 10 from renewals, and they've got to go hunt to get the other 20. We like that combination a lot. And there's a lot of ways to get there and structure it. There's a true art and science to building compensation plans, but that's ideally what you're looking for.
Now, Ernest, how do you know, you know, if you're trying to gauge it to be 50-50, mm-hmm. how do you put a number on how much they should sell? You're doing that based on mm-hmm. the territory that they're mm-hmm. covering, or mm-hmm. or what?
Yeah, it's a great question. We saw many questions like that as we were preparing for this meeting, and some that we'll tuck in here, Jed. We like to do some forecasting and modeling. Our recommendation via spreadsheet is to build a three-tier model, gold, silver, bronze, okay? And in that model is obviously your salary, house accounts, renewals, and some forecast for what you need to do sales-wise. So I'm just going to, you know, round numbers, $1,000 a page, easy, right? And at the bronze level, it says in the spreadsheet, you know, each month, going out every single month over the next 12, and we really like 24 months, you're going to need to sell minimum $1,000 to earn the bronze level. And when you do that, and we tie in your salary, your house accounts, your renewals, you're going to earn X at bronze. Okay? And at silver, instead of $1,000, you're going to sell $2,000. Or at that rate of selling 2,000, you're going to be at the silver level performance, and look what happens to your compensation in the 12 months and 24 months. And then at the gold, instead of 1,000 per issue or per month, you're going to be at 3,000. Let's do some forecasting at the gold level. Now, remember, when we're doing this, Jed, there are people inside of that company that actually are selling at the gold, silver, and bronze level. Okay, it's a very important piece that we don't want to ever sit down with somebody in a job interview or with a current team and say, well, let us show you the gold, silver, and bronze, and the team rolls their eyes and says, no one's ever sold it silver or bronze. We're lucky to get, you know, silver or gold, we're lucky to get bronze around here. So recognize for those of you that are leaders, when you're building compensation plans, it has to be reasonable and doable. So, Jed, back to your question, you want to take a look at the prior maybe 12 or 24 months by the overall publications and what the performance has been, what the net gain has been. Then look at individuals. We like to start by ranking all individuals, and we look at ranking them by gross revenue sold, renewal percentages, net gain, which, of course, is what we sold versus what we lost. So we try to look at all of those factors, and then we look at the performance, and we say, well, who was at the top 10%? That's our gold level of performance. Who was in the next band of maybe 20 or 25%? That's our silver level. And then where does the bronze fall? Okay, so, Jed, when we're building these gold, silver, bronze, and we're doing some forecasting for how to back into the 50-50 model, we don't have to imagine it. It's coming right from the performance of our current team.
And that's something that you freely share with the members of the team.
That's something. Oh, absolutely. It's important to recognize that when you're – I mean, let me just go down two tracks here. When you're working with new hires, you're just going to share composite data so that they know that when they walk in the door that there are team members that are at gold and silver and bronze. Everyone's delivering in that space. By the way, what's the opposite? Hire somebody and tell them, here's gold, silver, and bronze. Have them walk through the door and have them realize that no one's earning at those levels. What happens to that person?
They don't think it's possible.
They're gone.
Right.
They're gone. They'll walk in the door and out the door 48 hours later.
Right.
That's why we have to be reasonable. Now, when you're working with a current team, then you would still show them composite numbers, and then when you work individually one-on-one with each individual on your team, then you would actually show them where they fit. So, Sally, here's what I want you to know. Here's gold, silver, and bronze. Let me just show you the spreadsheet we actually built over the last 24 months. You actually set the curve. You are the gold, whether you realize that or not. Let me show you why. Here were your gross sales. Here were your net gains. Here were your renewal percentages. Here's where it fell when we did the modeling for house accounts and renewals and so forth. Okay? So that's how we back into that piece. I want all of you to know, we want all of you that are listening to today's program, this piece about modeling in gold, silver, bronze is absolutely categorically mandatory. Mandatory anytime you're folding in a new hire. 24 months, three tiers, and it's got to pass the smell test. Okay? It is the single most important tool. Jed, in all my publication days from hiring and the best work I ever did, you know, I used to say, yeah, you know, let me interview this person. Here's how our comp model works. The salary is this. The commission is that. Here are the benefits. What do you think? And I would get this puzzled look, and it was like, okay, I'll join, or no, I won't join, or they did join, but the money wasn't what they wanted, or they did join, they didn't ramp up fast enough. I couldn't figure out what I was missing until I finally took pen to paper, and I'm going, well, I know what's missing. I'm not showing them there's a ramp up. For example, Jed, who can join a team in this month, sell this month, and get paid anything next month? It's not going to happen. Right, it's too short a period of time.
Right. No.
You have to literally say, if you started here and you sold to the deadline, and then we invoiced, and then the client paid, it might be 75 days, and that's including if they made a sale the first day of their employment.
Right.
So what does the model show for their new sale commission in the first month? Zero.
Right.
Maybe zero in the second, even though they're selling. So you even have to flow in where the actual commissions are going to fall. Now, I realize online's a little different, right? Because you can sell something today, you can go online, you can bill it today, and be paid. Publications, on the print side, we realize what? A little different. Okay.
Would you adjust the salary model to compensate for that first month, or is that just a risk the new hire takes?
No, you see, that's exactly what starts to happen. So then you find yourself looking down, and you say, wow, I'm really excited about this new hire in months 6 to 12, but I think the first 6 months are light. I think they're going to struggle. Or the person on the other side of the desk actually says the words, you know what, I'm looking at the model, thanks for spelling it out, I can't put food on the table those first 3 months. You see, that's the value of this gold, silver, bronze. That's how we tie in smart compensation plans. I'd rather have that conversation with a new hire up front than the back end be surprised or wonder why they left 6 weeks later.
Sure, right.
So your question, Jed, is absolutely perfect.
Right.
Okay. So as all of you are listening to this, okay, think about the way you present compensation. Now, I realize, again, we're working on new hires, and we'll, in the third part of our call, talk about implementing programs, but that's important. Let me just rattle through a couple of key points to consider as well. Think about quarterly bonuses. I really like, and we like, a 13-week carrot, quarterly bonuses of performance. Think about career paths and how they tie into compensation plans. Okay, career paths are an important part, and much like we were talking about your superstars, what is their career path? Maybe not to cross into sales management or sales leadership, but what if they just want to be that eagle that just wants to keep selling for you? But if they have too many accounts and they've just got turned into the absolute best customer service or inside sales person you've ever had and the highest paid, then there's a career path you need for them. They specifically need a career path of the way that you handle their account load, their salaries, their commissions, so you can continue to have your best people selling. It's absolutely key. Also recognize that you want to know what's happening in your industry. What are competitors paying? What are nearby companies paying in that sector? Maybe they're not exactly in our advertising space. But, for example, if you're working in the automotive space, then you might like to know what sort of the muffler salespeople are getting paid, or the tool companies are being paid. Now, I realize that that's out of the media space. But it's important to recognize in a sector, when you're sector-focused, that you can get that data of those who are selling directly in your space or those that are selling nearby. Because oftentimes, people in publications, Jed, move back and forth from publication and ad sales and media sales and move back over to the vendor-supplier side and come back to media sales. They go back and forth.
Okay. So are you trying to then match your competition, so to speak?
It's not so much matching. You have to first know what their compensation is. I guess I should frame it like this. If I'm looking at a compensation plan in my marketplace, I'm going to talk to anybody who ever sends me a resume from anybody who even is in any kind of media sales. Even if I don't plan, or maybe they wouldn't be a fit to join my team, I've always got 15 minutes. Any resume that I get that is in any way, shape, or form related to media sales, whether that's online, print, radio, TV, doesn't matter, I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to learn. And there's two pieces. I'm going to look at it geographically. Gee, I wonder what people are earning in my geographical market. And then I'm going to also look at it by the sector. Gee, I wonder what do radio people get paid? Gee, I wonder, I wonder, boy, I've always had that competitor, Website X. I wonder what they're paying their people. Okay? Bless you. Bless you.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
No. That's cool. Okay. So as far as that goes, those are some of the variables. The other piece, and I'm just going to touch on this, Jed, because we probably could spend an hour just on this.
Right.
There are two different kinds of compensation plans, one that I call pro-company and one that I call pro-employee. I call this sharp-angled compensation. And the big distinction is basically this. The classic, here's your salary, here's your benefits, here's your commission, you get blank percent on everything you sell forever, does not create the opportunity for the company to continue to expect more performance. You basically get a very happy group that's doing nothing at a point in time. We actually, Jed, have to come into our clients at times and help them with this specific area, because their words are, how come we've got all these really well-paid people and our revenue is going backward? Okay, and it's in part because their compensation plans do not promote performance. Okay, the opposite of that is more company-driven, and that means every 12 months your compensation is compared to either an annual quota or an annual budget. It also means, for those of you who own your own publications or your own media groups and advertising sales, whichever the environment is, whether it's the publication or the online, it also means that when your company is ready to be sold, you'll be paid a premium because you've got people and a team that's focused on performance. Okay. Speaking of that, we're also big believers in tying compensation as deep as you can into the organization. Tie it to circulation, production, tie it to your web team, tie it to your SEO, tie it to your operations, tie it to everything that you can possibly do. Jed, there was nothing worse than coming rolling into my art and production department and saying, oh, my God, what a day. We've had the most amazing day. We sold 20 full pages. Would anyone like to stand up and give us an applause?
Right. Who's going to make those ads?
Okay. And the production team would be groaning.
Right.
And if you saw it, Lori would say, just throw them on my desk, would you?
Right.
Okay. I didn't sense that she had any excitement or joy. You know why? Because we just created more work for her. You know what that meant? Lori was going to be there till 10 o'clock tonight.
Right.
Okay. So you want your entire team all the way through as much as possible. Now, to be clear, when you move to operations, circulation, internet, production, design, graph, all those categories, okay, that are wrapped around media sales, recognize that it will not be at the same 50-50 ratio. It might be 90-10. It might be 80-20. Okay? So if you have those that are straight salary, they're not going to move to a 50-50 model if they're in an operation capacity. But, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, Jed, it's nice, even down to executive assistants, secretaries, receptionists, inside sales, there's all kinds of models that you can look at where when the team wins, everybody wins, and everyone's excited about it, and everyone's pulling together. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah,
so,
I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a challenge to initially implement, right, but it's worth it.
Absolutely. Let me fly some questions in here. Matt asks about, should a salesperson's expenses, auto, miles, cell phone be paid outside of compensation? Matt, it is typically inside of compensation, and that has always been that. Again, recognizing that in these economic times, some of that has shifted, but that's always been part of a bundled compensation. Ellen asks a question, what is good compensation for an inside sales rep? It's not as close, Ellen, to 50-50, but I like 70-30. I like 80-20. I like them to be performance-based. Okay. Lloyd asks, how do you structure compensation for online sales reps selling email, video, banners? A comment about that, Lloyd, we've seen a lot of research about this. Publishing companies who separate out their online have tremendous more success, and there's been a lot of research about this. I know it's so easy just to bundle it all together. Related to that, though, we also believe that it's best to bundle all of that together to not allow advertisers to choose whether they're just getting the newsletter or just getting your website or just getting your publication. We really want to bundle it. Part of the challenge with it, Jed, is that if we unbundle it, the cost per thousand, the CPM, becomes so unbelievably inexpensive for the online, it actually pulls dollars out of the print, which is actually very damaging on the publication side. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, it does. It's,
okay.
Happens all the time.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so Lloyd, that's a great question. We also have a question from Max. This, one of my most frequently asked questions, what is the best ratio to pay new advertisers versus repeat and lower commissions? Okay, so Max, your question is new ads versus renew. Renewal ads, it's not unusual to have two tiers. Okay, very, very common, and we like that model for a lot of reasons. And there's another question here. We'll pause. Melinda asked about how about draws? What are your feelings about draws? How do you determine the amount, the length, the duration? Melinda, it's a great question. Draws are used. They are helpful. I am not a fan of draws that a person gets deeper and deeper and deeper in the hole because they're going to get so deep in the hole they're going to leave. It is typically when you build a gold, silver, bronze model, it will tell you, it will show you, you know, if you have a comp model that's going to put your that new person in the, I'm making this up, $60,000 range, which is round numbers $5,000 a month, what you really have to do is look at how many months before they get to that $5,000 range, and that will typically tell you where you want to implement a draw. But I'm also, Jed, a believer in a cascading draw. Okay, that says, as I, you know, each month as we get closer and closer and closer to the draw going away, you've got to increase your sales and performance on the other side. So it sort of cascades. The draw slides down as your sales and revenues slide up. Does that make sense, Jed?
It does, yeah. And for those of you who are unclear on what a draw means, it's just an advance on commission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, very good. So we'll field more of the questions here as we continue forward. Thank you for many of you sent questions in advance of our call. Some that are coming in, we're fielding those real time. Let's move to the third part of our call, though, because this is the part about the implementation of smart compensation plans, and this is the implementation of any compensation plan. So the first thing we have to recognize is this is like going into a Waterford crystal shop with a feather. All right. Anytime you tinker with anyone's compensation, you run the risk of losing them. So you have to be very clear that this is not something that you're going to do every year. By the way, small distinction, but when we do have compensation that resets each year, that's different. But this is the actual building or rebuilding of compensation plans. When you build them, when you craft them, measure twice, cut once, get it right. Okay? And recognize that anytime you go to alter compensation plans, that nobody likes change, and they're immediately going to run it through this filter. If I took the current compensation plan, plugged in last year's compensation, what will I earn?
Right.
Okay? Right. It's so simple. All right?
Even,
and Frank,
even people who are challenged at math can figure that out in about, mm-hmm, you know, 30 seconds, right?
Absolutely. Okay? So a couple of things about compensation plans. Test them and test them and test them. Get them right. Run it through the filter to make certain that you've answered the question before Mary or Tom or Rick comes in your office and says, gee, Ernest, I looked at the comp plan. I took last year's performance. I've run it through the current model. And let me tell you how much less I'm earning. Nothing is worse than that conversation. And you need to anticipate that. And you might say, yes, that part is true because you primarily sold our print publication. What I want more of is the online, and you notice the difference in the compensation. I doubled the commission rate for the online. So Mary, Tim, or Sue, what I'm trying to signal to you, okay, is I want more online. Or it might be, well, Mary, what you'll notice is we're paying a lower rate for renewals because they renew so strong across our entire advertising model. What I'm signaling to you is I increased the rate for new biz by 30%. Or you might be, Rick, what you're going to notice in our compensation plan and the way it's intended is that we've been selling 90% of our biz off rate card. And if you come off the rate card by 3%, it costs you 18% in dollars. And if you come off at 3% more, it costs you 36% in dollars. What I'm trying to signal to you, Rick, is we need a compensation model here that pays to sell value. Okay, so you can hear that these are some of those examples that a compensation plan might appear to pay an individual less, but you're signaling that you want a shift in behavior. I want more new biz. Look how we've mapped this. I want better renewals. You're selling 10 and you're losing 8. I want more rate card. On rate card selling being done. Therefore, here's my signal of what's happening related to that. So compensation plans, Jed, really shape the performance. If you point a person to performance with their compensation for better renewals, better rate card, better new biz, whatever that might be, you will get it if the compensation plan points there. Does that make sense?
It does. How far in advance do you introduce a new compensation plan?
A couple of points. So behind the scenes, you're going to be testing and modeling it. Once you're ready to go, it is helpful to sit down with a couple of the senior top sales performers. Number one, you want them to know that they're in the inner circle. Okay. Number two, you want their buy-in. Number three, you want to show them your testing and modeling to see if they're going to punch any holes in it. Because better to do it there with the senior person and make revisions there than to go out to the whole team, flub it, and then have the senior people come back in your office and go, not only is the team upset, but we're your senior and your best, you know, team members, and we're your eagles, and we're not happy. Okay?
Yeah, it's probably the kind of thing where, you know, there's a fine line between creating excitement and creating apprehension.
Absolutely. And you might pause and say, hey, listen, Ernest, you know, you're going to sit down with that senior, you know, team. You know, how soon is that going to rip through the organization? Pretty quick, okay? By the time you sit down, if I were to sit down with a senior group on, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd be prepared to present it system-wide by Thursday.
Okay? And would you do it for the following month, or would you do it – I mean, that's another question. Did your compensation plans generally go monthly? And then if you were doing it today, would you be doing it for June, or would you give people more notice than that?
Sure. A couple of things. Number one, new compensation plans, Jed, to new hires, we always roll out from hello. They start right in.
Right.
Number two, it depends on the cycle. It depends on the tenure of the team. I lean to like a 90-day rollout. Here's the new comp plan. You know, and here's what's going to happen over the next 90 days. But honestly, there's other times where we just can't do it. For example, sometimes we've changed our publication frequency. Sometimes we've changed our rate card so significantly. Sometimes we've added in so much new online work that we have to move our rates up so significantly that we can't roll it out. Or we might just phase it where we'll say, listen, your print will stay at this rate for the next 90 days. This is where it's going to change. But the online, because we've invested so much and we're doing so much and this is what's changing, the online is going to shift. And that shifts, you know, starting Monday or starting the 1st.
Right.
Okay? So there's a number of pieces here related to test, model, rollout in terms of phases. And once again, there are a lot of variables to this, Jed. There's no real definitive, you know, hey, absolutely, compensation plans, you have to give every single person 72 days. You know, I haven't seen anything that looks that definitive. But what I do know is that, you know, when working with my clients and the companies that we work with over all the years, you know, we tailor it. We tailor it in terms of, you know, their company culture, the seniority. For example, you know, sometimes we're in the middle of rolling out a new compensation plan and two senior people leave. You know what just happened? We're not going to roll it out over 90 days. We're rolling it out today. You know why? Because we're dispersing all the accounts. You know, so sometimes there's a scenario that triggers it that causes us to respond different.
Sure. Right.
Okay? So recognize that sometimes in this grandfathering, sometimes we've grandfathered existing people into their current model for 6 months or more. There's the other side of the coin, and there were some strategic reasons related to that. Okay? So let me roll through, if we could, some of the questions that came in, because there was a lot of questions that tied into this point about how to implement and what the response might be, and we can weave some of this together. So Matt asks, straight commission compensation, the best plan for salespeople. Matt, earlier we talked a little bit about that. You know, it's tough to hire really, really good people with straight commission. We would encourage you to look a little deeper, go back to the gold, silver, bronze model, do some forecasting and see what additional dollars you can bring in. You will be able to hire a much better profile of person if you're able to do that, okay? Straight commission is very difficult unless you have a very installed base that a person can step into, okay? Here's one. Sarah asks, how do I encourage my commission-only sales execs to think like an entrepreneur? Sarah, that's an interesting question, right, Jed? You know, how do you have people think about, you know, the biz like they're business owners, yes?
Right. I mean, it's you know, that's the challenge. It's sort of people either have it or they don't. You know, I think it's tough to get people who aren't sort of instinctually thinking in that regard to, mm-hmm. to begin thinking in that regard. You know, I mean, certainly bonuses and you know, different, you know, sort of incentivizing them helps. But you know, if you're not the kind of person who reacts positively to that kind of, you know, that sort of manufactured pressure, then, mm-hmm. then, you know, then you're probably not that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and probably shouldn't be a salesperson.
Yeah, well, you're right. And Sarah, some of it for me starts with, are we hiring the right kind of people, right? Do we have the right clay? Is important, Sarah. Secondly, how is their compensation built? For example, you might have them set up just with their regular selling compensation, and then you might be bonusing them for the more entrepreneurial projects that we're talking about here. So the key piece to recognize is that, if you have projects you want them to take on, like, for example, you want them to go out and do research across six of your competitors and come back in the next 4 weeks, there might be a bonus for that. Or they might attend a trade show with, you know, six key things that you want them to learn and glean. Or you want them to go online and do the following research. We just completed, Jed, some white papers for clients in Toronto and another one in Vancouver and another one in Denver, another one in Dallas, doing some white papers on search engine rankings and visibility. It took almost 80 hours to build these models, and that was a very entrepreneurial project that we've got a couple people on our team that are working on. So, Sarah, we look for projects. We look to share those with our team to see who might be the best and who might be the best suited, and we look to pay them for that, and therefore we do have those that are thinking more entrepreneurially. Okay. We have another note from Larry, who said, for 22 years I've offered the same salespeople 20% on everything. Last week I changed it to 17% and 25% for new. So I think what Larry is signaling is that existing biz, Jed, was reduced to 17, 25 for new. You know, was this a good move? Larry,
you say no one was happy?
Yeah, and no one was happy, yes. Larry, we appreciate that. You know, when you say that no one's happy, you know, again, the question is, how was it framed? How was it rolled out? What research did you do? What modeling did you do? We're guessing, though, it was probably a case where we weren't getting enough new biz. Okay, so as a percentage, what you're saying to them is you're signaling to your team, you get a 25% increase, okay, which is the difference between 20 and 25, a 25% increase on your performance for new biz. So that signals to me, if I were working for you, that you want me to go drive new biz, and you're not going to let me just sit and camp on my house accounts. Hence the spread between the 17 and the 25.
You know, and some of the issue, and this is probably relatively obvious, but I mean, some of the issue might be too that perhaps, you know, perhaps it wasn't articulated well enough to the sales reps what kind of new business is actually available. You know, I mean, maybe it would create more excitement if the salespeople had some stats. Like, for example, you know, say, look, here's a, you know, 75 accounts in your territory that aren't currently advertising with us, you know, or you know, had a sense of like what your market share was and where and how it could grow, you know. You know, maybe there's just the idea that, you know, I mean, that the new accounts are harder to come by, because, you know, it's my experience that, you know, that salespeople oftentimes are become pretty myopic in how they sort of look at their, you know, their world. You know, their world tends to be, you know, pretty specific, sort of based around these customers that they have and trying to find others like them. You know, and to get them to sort of think differently and think out of the box sometimes can be a challenge because they're so specific in what they have found success in.
Yeah, no, you raise a great point. We just got a note from Angela who says, when a senior sales exec leaves, you mentioned divvying up their accounts. Our company just gives these accounts to a new rep coming in. What do you think of this model? It depends. If somebody leaves, my first piece is, what is the profile of those accounts and who is the best person to handle those accounts? If we're working at all by geography, yeah, it does make sense to disperse them geographically. I'm a big fan of that. The other side of that, though, is to have a new person coming in to step into an existing account load. There's generally a learning curve, and they probably won't succeed. And that would actually be putting, Jed, some of those really good accounts or strong accounts in the hands of kind of a newbie. So, I'm not exactly comfortable on that without having a lot more details of the why, you know what I'm saying? I'd be more inclined to say to my current team, listen, you're our strongest horses and you're here. Let's categorize your clients A, B, and C. Let's take all of your C ones, move it over to a new so they can cut their teeth on the smaller, easier stuff. And then I'm going to take the A and B stuff from the one who left and slide that over to you. What I'm also signaling to my existing people is, hey, I'm going to butter the bread that's here, and I'm going to tell you that I'm always going to come to my current team to take care of you first, okay? But then we get to that other side, Jed, where, yeah, but aren't we doing what we just talked about? We're taking our best salespeople and loading them up with accounts.
Right.
The answer is yes. Yes, but watch this piece. I would say, but I'm going to take some of these A's and B's, but I'm going to pull off some of your C's and move to the new person, and I'm actually going to shave some of your B's so you can keep selling, and I'm going to increase your salary so you still have more selling time. So you're basically going to get more A's, some B's, offload some B's, and get rid of your C's. That's the kind of shift that gets done when you have that kind of movement.
And Ernest, when you make that kind of shift, do you have any sort of sense of or rule about how that impacts advertisers? Because I know that salespeople believe that shifting personnel is a horrible event that has detrimental impact on an advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that may be true in some cases. My guess is that the advertisers are not as attached to the salespeople as the other way around. But what is your take on that?
You know, it's a challenge. Let's be honest, right? Advertisers get used to working with, their advertising media salesperson, okay? They develop a relationship. So anytime you have somebody leave, whoever steps behind has to do a really thorough job. Now, sales managers that are on this call, the words of guidance for you is that you need to always be involved in those accounts. So, in fact, if your sales rep leaves or a team member leaves, you're able to step right in to have that relationship. That's one of the weaknesses that we oftentimes see, Jed, in media sales, is that we have sales managers that are two steps removed that are not as involved. Someone leaves and there's this big gaping hole. But if we have really A-level clients, I don't really want to pitch them to somebody brand new walking through the door who could spend the next 3 to 4 months getting up to speed. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
We might lose those best advertisers.
Right.
So, Larry, we're hoping that that's helpful. Let me just see, Jed. There's one other question I wanted to tie in. I want to be respectful. I realize we're right at the top of the hour. Okay, here we go. Glenn asks, how do you bring in a smart compensation program that is different from the past program and perceived by the top producers as not being as lucrative as what's been in place for years? Glenn, same rules apply that we've been talking about. That you have to make certain that your plan is well thought out, that your focus is well intended. What are the goals of the new compensation plan? What is it you're looking to accomplish and why? And then how does the compensation fit into that? And then you do want to sit down with your top producers before you roll it out to get their buy-in, to ensure that the model works, to explain what it is you're signaling that you want more of or less of, depending on what it is you're looking to signal, and to be able to get their buy-in before you roll it out to the team. Okay? All right. We're at the top of the hour. We have covered an incredible amount of information. Thank you to all of you. We had so many questions, Jed, to sort of weave and work into here. We're hoping that this has been helpful for you. It's always a joy to be here together. Our calls are always about strategies that will help you win with your media, your advertising sales, your online footprint, your print publication. All of it works together. You have to have all the pieces together in order to succeed, and we're hoping at the very beginning of the call, what you hear is, guess what? Advertisers are still spending money. You want your piece of that pie. Are you having to work harder for it? Yes. Do your advertisers have more choices than ever before? Yes. Do you have to be more knowledgeable about your competitors than ever before? Yes and yes. Okay? Some version of you've got to be good. All right? But we also know that you're on this call to be good and great, and that's the reason that you're here with us, so we applaud you for that. Jed, how about some closing words for the group?
No, I want to, you know, thanks again, Ernest, as always. Learned a lot, and you obviously have an enormous amount of experience in this area. Thanks for all of you who joined us. We really appreciate it, and hopefully it was worthwhile and you learned something.
Absolutely. And because we realize that compensation questions are much more complex, we typically open our lines at the end of our calls. But if you'd like any additional follow-up or follow-through, just please send a note. You'll get a follow-up thank you note to our program. Ping us a note if you'd like to chat a little further related to that. We're going to post this on our LinkedIn group. We'll send you the URL. We have more than 500 publishing leaders and media professionals from all over the world, advertising sales pros. Come join us there, and we'll continue the discussion there. And then in a couple of days, we'll send you out the URL that you can come listen to the program as well and share it with your team. There was a lot that we covered here related to compensation. It's like a custom-built shoe. Rather than just going to buy one off the shelf, it takes about 16 measurements to get it just right. And when you do, it's a thing of beauty. And if you don't, ouch, it can be sort of painful on the other side. So compensation plans, do it. Always remember, like a feather going into a Waterford crystal shop, when you do it well, you'll have success. Okay? Jed, as always, an absolute pleasure to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us on our Media Bids Power Hour. This is Ernest and Jed signing off. And we'll be back next month. If there's any topics you'd like us to include, as always, ping us a note and we'll tuck that into our planning in the next couple of days. Okay?
Thanks, Jed, everyone.
Thanks for everything. Take care.
Thank you.